August 29, 2018, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Take it away. he's the boss man. Boss man. Boss man. Oh, have a care. Cause she's the boss man. She's the boss man. Palomino steady rocking, loping up the hill. Palomino steady rocking. I ask him and he always will. A little tango is warm, but a lullaby for trot. Palomino, Palomino. Palomino, Palomino, Palomino.
Pot for Peter show. Hey, people. Brother Matt is still away, grieving loss from his nephew Maddie. It's a terrible thing. But I'm not exactly man alone because of the wonders of Skype and those engineers in Estonia. I got with me Karen. How do you pronounce your last name?
Just like it looks, it's Haglof. Not very elegant, but that's what it is.
Yeah, but it could be Haglof.
It could be if you were in Sweden, yeah.
Okay. So Haglof, okay. I kind of guessed that, but I wanted you to tell me. Karen, thank you for coming on the show. And
thank
love
you.
Your new record, and I know you got another one coming kind of from the same thing, but let's go way back. Can you tell me your earliest musical recollection?
Well, I mean, that was when I was, really little. I mean, we didn't really have musical instruments or anything in the house, but my mom and dad really liked music and played stuff on the stereo back then, and it was mainly things like what you would consider standard for the day, like Harry Belafonte and Leroy Anderson and Mahalia Jackson. And my father used to like to direct Victory at Sea in the living room, with the soundtrack going from that show. And I guess that would be the earliest thing I remember.
We're talking where, Minneapolis?
Yeah, this is a suburb of Minneapolis, what's now a suburb, but back then was like unincorporated area, Burnsville, Minnesota. It was farmland with a few houses dotted in the farmland.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
Good place, good people.
Right, Minnesota, I still have it.
I've got some friends there going way back, and it's a good place. I like Minnesota. Okay, so there's no instruments in your house, but your parents are listeners.
Yep.
Okay, can you tell me the first record you bought yourself?
The first record I bought myself was a 45 of the Ode to Billy Joe by Bobby Gentry.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. You know what? I should say what we started the show off. It was John Coltrane, this new album they found, right? The lost album. Directions at Once, Nature Boy. And then we had, from your new record, Palomino Steady Rockin', Karen Haglof. Did you buy it like at, there wasn't really record stores, right? It was more like a drugstore or something?
Well, I lived out in the farmland. There was 8 houses in a cul-de-sac, and it was surrounded by pastures and woodlands, so it was like right when it was starting to be really built up. I mean, way back then in Burnsville. And we all had horses, and we all would, ride down to the corner store, which was, a little... I mean, it wouldn't even qualify as a shopping mall. There was a Tom Thumb Superette, and then there was a music store, and then there was a store that sold some records, and there was a beauty salon and a couple other random places, and a gas station.
Okay.
And that was the closest place to go to, and we could buy records down there, and go down there pretty much every day or a couple of times a week if we wanted to.
Yeah, but you're saying there's 5-6 pads, and one's a music store, one's a record store, so that's
pretty
good.
I know, it's pretty good. I guess I was pretty lucky.
Because in Pedro, you actually bought the records, if it wasn't at the drugstore, like Thrifty's, they had the records along with the school band instruments, which brings up school. Did you play music in school?
I played the clarinet in 5th and 6th grade and then was not good enough at the clarinet to continue on in 7th grade, so I was moved to the bass clarinet, which was...
Eric Dolphy.
If you move down in chairs, you got to the bass clarinet.
You moved down in register, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, one time I was doing the session with the... God, who's that drummer man? A beautiful guy from Tulsa. Jim... Keltner.
Huh.
And he said, he was pointing up at the frets way up high, and he goes, you know, that's the upper register. Then he pointed down the fatter strings by the nut. He says, that's the cash register. Yeah. Producers don't want you playing bass way up there, so I understand. Very wise man. So bass clarinet, Eric Dolphy, you know. You guys probably didn't do some Eric Dolphy, maybe.
I don't think so.
Okay. Were you in the marching band?
No, we didn't have a marching band.
Okay.
It was just strictly, you know, band.
Yeah,
class.
Kind of classical stuff. And
you know, like, we do occasional concerts for the school, but nothing really much more than that.
What about outside of school, like the garage band or bedroom thing?
Well, I mean, that all started with going down to the Superette on horses and there being a music store down there. And first it was called Suburban Music, and, you know, they sold guitars and amplifiers, and all the kind of hip-looking musicians of the day used to go in there and buy equipment. And, you know, that was definitely a magnet for, you know, a teenage girl to go in and, like, try and take guitar lessons and be able to hang out there all the time. So that was kind of the first... and actually playing some music that I wanted to play that was not a clarinet or a bass clarinet.
Yeah, so you move over from the clarinets to guitar.
Yeah, my brother had started taking guitar lessons down at this music store, and so I would pick up the guitar that he was using for the lessons, and then I decided I wanted to do lessons too, and so that's where that all started.
What, was it acoustic guitar?
Yeah, it was a Stella.
Stella, I remember that. That's Italian for star.
Yeah, the strings were about an inch off the fingerboard.
Oh, yeah, like William Tell, the bow and arrow. My first bass was like that. It helps build up the muscles in your fingers, though. So.
Yeah, and those little indents in your fingers as you're trying to do like a B-flat or an F-chord or something.
Sure, sure. What was your teacher like?
The first teacher I had was somebody who sought strictly out of the Mel Bay Book One. I don't know.
Mel Bay, I remember. Alfred's Method and Mel Bay, right.
And then, you know, as musicians will be, you know, there was kind of a rotating group of guitar teachers because somebody would go out on tour and they'd kind of give up their students to somebody else who was coming in. And so... I would get somebody who would go strictly by the book, and then the next week would be somebody who was teaching me Sloop John D, and then the next week would be somebody who was like, what do you want to learn off the radio? And it was kind of like random like that, and all of it was great.
Yeah, sure, sure. Did you do any gigs? Did you get any bands at this time?
My best friend and I played guitar then, and we played in church. We played, you know, songs for church, basically, and then... didn't really play band type stuff till I was like 17 or 18 and, you know, getting out of high school.
Was it like Guitar Mask kind of stuff?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah. And then, out of high school, then you go to college. Where do you go to college? You're not a Golden Gopher, are you?
I was for a short time, but then, you know, I kind of graduated high school and went to University of Minnesota and realized that I had no idea what I was doing there, and so... quit to play in an almost all-girl cover band that was working in the kind of five-state area around that time, which was like 1974 or 75, something like that.
Wow, I was still in high school.
I know, I'm a little older.
Yeah, I graduated in 76. Here, I want to play Slow Stampede, okay?
Okay.
know so well, kept it to myself. Forced a cheery smile, thank yous all the while. Tried to act graciously, as if that could ever be. I'm caught up in the flow, stay in peace. Drop the reins under his feet. Fingers curl the mane, but no control. Came into his back to try to stay home. Grab right up to the nail. Travel like you are the best version of yourself. zajedno herojsko vreme.
Thank you. not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason. If we dig deep in our history and our doctrine and remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to speak, to associate and defend causes that were, for the moment, unpopular.
Your love is in jail, whispering for it. An escape, just
nice and dear.
Everything that I say makes you just go away.
around the house make me sadder than I've ever been. Cobwebs come to rest in places never were when you were here, filling up my life when you were here. I never had time to settle in before. Cobwebs round the barn make me sadder than I've ever been. Cobwebs all across the stalls and nameplates of my old friends. Times change, takes my breath away to see it. I must be moving on and tear those cobwebs down. I got my faith, got my pride, but sometimes I can't sleep at night. Got my faith, got my hope, trying to keep away from the retrospective storm. Times change, takes my breath away to see it. I must be moving on and tear the cobwebs down. Sometimes I'm still cold at night. Got my faith, got my hope, but try to keep away from the retrospective storm. Cobwebs all around the house make me sadder than I've ever been. Cobwebs all around in places never were when you were here, filling up my life. Oh, but you're not. I must be moving on and tear those cobwebs down.
Watch for Pedro Show. Yeah, that was a. Oops, that was off a new EP. Carried Hive off with the Slow Stampede, then Band of Susans, which we're going to get to how that happened, right? Big Apple Adventure. And then from Macedonia, 21 Vet, Nova Sons, Pontinha do Capeta, from Hermes de Limbo. Yeah, my Portuguese very shitty. So brand new from Eugene Shadburn, the Sun Watchers, Ghost Spiel. Ish Kabibble out of Bufftown, Datum, guided by voices, Mr. Pollard, many, many songs. Table at Fools 2, named the band out of, Brazil. Makes sense. And Round Eye, some low-wise living in Shanghai. Wait and see. And finally, Karen Hagloff with Cobwebs. From her work. So you want to leave? You don't want to go to school in Minnesota. You want to go east?
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything I wanted to graduate and follow up with. So I played guitar in cover bands, and then kind of started hanging around the Minneapolis scene, the Longhorn scene, with the Suicide Commandos and that whole crew, and then that led to a move east in about 1979.
Oh yeah, Tim Wright. Yeah, Perubus. Whenever I think of the Suicide, because they both had those records out.
Yeah.
And I met those guys, Steve McClellan, the First Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful people. Yeah, old days, older days. And so, okay, you. In fact, I know there was a strong Cleveland connection, but I guess there was some Minnesota, too. Longer drive, of course.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
And so what was it like moving to New York City? We're talking, what, late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah, the first time I came to New York was the spring of 79, and definitely realized that this is the place where I wanted to live. And so our band, the Crackers, moved out here in the summer of 79, intent on, you know, trying to make our way as musicians out here at that point. And it was a hot, blazing summer, kind of like it is today here. But yeah, I never wanted to live any place but New York after I got here.
And we're not talking Brooklyn people. In those days, it was strictly Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. East Village, babe.
Yeah, yeah. Richard Hell told me about moving there in 1970.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or you read the Victor Bacharach book about Lou Reed. Sometimes the landlord, you know, it was $12 a month, and sometimes he didn't even come around.
Yeah, that is kind of true. Yeah.
Yeah. Lower East Side, so I imagine. But very creative thing. So where was their place for the Crackers? That's a Minnesota name.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah.
Okay. Where were you guys playing?
We were playing that we played at Tier 3. We played at the Peppermint Lounge. I don't think we got to play at CB's. We might have played at CBGB's. We played out at Hoboken. We did some touring up and down the East Coast here, and then, you know, things just kind of disintegrated a little bit, and it was on to other...
Did Crackers ever record, Karen?
Huh?
Crackers ever record?
Yeah, we have an EP called Sir Crackers, which has four songs by Steve Almas, who was the main driving person in the band.
Well, Steve, he's involved with this new stuff.
Yeah, he is. He's producing.
And yeah, but also the bass.
Yeah, well, of course.
Bass first, then produce. No, I'm a little biased, Karen. I'm sorry. But all these years you've stayed with... Oh, that's bitching.
Yeah.
That's truly bitching.
Well, I've been in contact all these years, but when I decided to start playing again and thinking about making projects, I knew he would be the right person to talk to about trying to figure out my way through after not doing anything for so many years.
Okay. Okay, so... the Crackers packet, you start, you find Reese Chatham?
Yeah, the Crackers kind of packed it in, and I played with an artist, Robert Longo, on a couple of his music projects. And then through this guy, Tim Carr, a Minnesota guy who was an A&R person, I met Reese Chatham and ended up playing in his ensemble.
Yeah, I got to tell listeners out there, in those days, between music and visual and just all kinds of expression was kind of mixed. You met all kinds of people, right? It wasn't as divided up like
now. No, not at all.
Yeah. So now I know about Reese because actually in a parallel universe was a Glenn Branca also. And they,
yep.
Right, and
yeah,
I guess...
And the Reese people and a few people played with both kind of composers, and I was in the Reese kind of side of things.
Right, right. Whereas, like, Thirst was more Mr. Branca. It's interesting how they both were kind of onto the same thing, but from different places.
Isn't yeah, completely different methods.
You know, yeah.
But yeah, same kind of vision, I think.
Yeah, the idea that a serious, you know, composing could involve the electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. And lots of them.
Lots of notes and very dense. Yeah. Very dense. So interesting. So tell me what those kind of, compared to playing, you know, in Minnesota and the Crackers and cover bands. And I mean, you're there with like avant-garde.
There with what, sorry?
Kind of avant-garde, right? Compared
yeah,
to what,
yeah.
Where you had been. So was it a stretch for you?
Well, I guess it must have been a little bit of a stretch, although when we were playing the cover band, I mean, we didn't play like the almost all-girl cover band I played in. We played kind of, you know, unusual stuff for the day. We played some Iggy and the Stooges, and we played some MC5, and then we would do Leader of the Pack, and then we'd do some Led Zeppelin, so we were a little all over.
Oh, so it wasn't really top 40.
Yeah, okay. But not... strictly, and then we tried to do a little writing on our own, which didn't really go too far. And then, you know, with the Crackers, I mean, if I listen to old stuff from the Crackers back in Minnesota, I was definitely more like a Chuck Berry kind of coming out of that school. And then when we got to New York, it definitely became more dissonant. I don't know if it was just the location, but it seemed to change the way I played. So I don't know if it was something that was going to happen in any case, kind of moving into more avant-garde and sometimes atonal stuff and not so strictly kind of top 40 or song related.
Yeah, well, I'm interested. How did Reese run the band?
Reese, well, I mean, he's the composer, so, yeah. You know, we basically, a lot of things we did were in alternate tunings, and so we'd have specific tunings, and he would score out the music, and I would have my, you know, soprano guitar score, and then there would be somebody who would have, like, more of an alto, and then there would be the bass players. And it was all, you know, written down and in scores. But then there would be sections where, you know, when you see fit, change to what you feel like playing kind of thing. So there was definitely room to explore within the genre. But, you know, Reese was definitely the composer and the director of all.
Right, and this is kind of new for you, right, compared to your other band experiences.
Yeah, pretty much. But I really, really liked it, and I liked doing that stuff.
Yeah, so sure, sure.
And I would have gravitated toward it in any case, I think.
And at this time, to support yourself, you were cooking?
I was cooking. I was cooking in little places in the East Village here. You know, there was a place called Gallery 93, which then became called White Wave, and I cooked at Eat at 11 St. Mark's, and then got into the Grape Jones Cafe on Bowery and Lafayette, which was here until very recently.
Yeah, right. I remember that, Pat. Yeah. Now, were you cooking earlier? Well, you had home ec or something.
No, well, yeah, home ec, and then my mom worked, and so I was kind of that was part of my allowance.
Cooking at home. Okay. So you had learned, okay.
I've done some baking and cooking at home, but getting to New York, I basically, you know, kind of talked my way into a waitress job that I hated, and then a cook quit one day, and I said, I can do that. Let me cook. I'll cook. And that's where that came from.
You know, because I washed pots and pans when I was younger at a hospital, and one of the benefits was you could eat the chow before it went down.
That would be a benefit, yeah. Yeah, I didn't buy any food in those years.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When you're behind the scenes, it's a little... In the waitress, and maybe not as easy. Both my sisters did that to put themselves through school. Yeah. But behind the scenes, you can kind of... Yeah, you can kind of live off of it.
Yeah, no, you could eat quite well. You can eat a very, very, you know, well-proportioned diet behind the scenes if you work.
Did you get to record with Mr. Chan?
I did. We played there was a recording of Durnagotter, which is Thunder Gods. That was I'm on that one, and I think I'm on something called Drastic Classicism as well.
Okay, now that worked itself out, and what led to after that?
After Reese?
Yeah.
Well, and it was with playing with Reese that I met a lot of the people who were playing Band of Susans.
Oh, Robert Paas. I had him on the show last month. Yeah, okay.
Singer, and then Ron Spitzer, who were kind of the knights for the Band of Susans. And at that time, there were actually three Susans, but two of the Susans were in flux, and I ended up replacing a Susan at one point. And so I segued from Reese's band into the Band of Susans.
Okay, yeah. Because Robert Paas kind of... Yeah, there's overlap, but... between people in the different projects. Because I had him on last month, and he taught me a lot about that time. We're talking like about the mid-80s.
Yeah, probably mid to late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
And God, I knew the boss, not the boss, but the manager, Smith.
Paul Smith.
Paul Smith, yeah, Blast First.
Yeah, Blast First, yeah.
Right.
Or England, yeah.
Because I made a proj with... first called Chicone Youth, and he had something to do with it. It's a small world.
It's a tiny world, surprisingly enough.
I know. Incredible. We're at the end of the first hour, August 29th, 2018 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Special guest Karen Hegloff. Hold tight for hour two. August 29th, 2018 is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
singer I once knew taught me this simple song. I'd like to play it now for you in hope to pass it on. Whoa, whoa, cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa, good horses are historical. Snakebite was part Mustang, quarter horse and Appaloose. Strong and serving, self-preserving spirit of Cayuse. Cowhand Jack, young and brash, thought he knew it all. He won snakebite one stormy night on a lucky draw. Well, Jack bragged up his riding skills and womanizing too. Lindsay Lou, the rancher's daughter, did not approve. Had in mind to teach a lesson, came up with a dare. Challenged Jack on snakebite against her and her brown mare. Oh, the devil's all in a hang on, go! Dust horizon, snake bite first, but riderless. Lindsay second, still astride. Jack limped up the neck. Crowd proclaiming Lindsay winner. Jack still in a daze. Lindsay took both horses and sent them off to graze. She said, whoa, whoa, cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa. Good horses are historical. Cowboy singer I once knew sings no more today. Time and tide wait for no man, and Ray has passed away. Lindsay rides on snakebite now in the rodeo. Jack left town shortly after his disgraceful show. But Jack may have the last laugh at Lindsay, to be fair. Though she wouldn't give back snakebite, let Jack take her mare. And a year after the race, that brown mare dropped a foal with snakebite's face. Snakebite two, I count on you. Replay snakebite one. Replay snakebite one. Cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa, good horses are historical. Whoa, whoa, cowboys come and cowboys go. Whoa, whoa, good horses are historical. Good horses are historical.
Thank you. Tommy Toddle, he's a canty child, say canty and fae cousy. The fairies like a monkey wheel, and they built him a wee hoosie. And when the hoosie it was built, all finished but the door, the fairy man came a skipping in, and danced upon the floor. He looped up and he loped down, he frisked and he flung, till Per Wita Mi Taddle was malmaced among the throng. Tommy Toddle, he's a canty child, say canty and say cousy. The fairies like a monkey whale, and they built him a wee hoosie.
Smell like a damn fish. bathroom and a cabinet.
Pigeons. I've got a broken window in my bathroom, not to be confused with the five other broken windows spread out around the house. This one's always been a favorite nesting spot for the local rats with wings. Again this year, some unimaginative hen went for the obvious and did the whole ritual, built a huge nest, etc., an awful lot of trouble for just one lousy egg. When the little darling hatched, the mother and some random father male fussed and cooed, much too much attention for good normal birdle development, I thought. Baby grew, and so far so standard, right? Wrong. Because as soon as little Waldo was ready to become a man, came the catch. Waldo refused to learn to fly. No amount of gang pigeon community action could get him to take the plunge, either into the air shaft, hardly formidable from the first floor, but I don't know, I'm not a bird, or to make for blue sky. They even tried pecking him off the windowsill, cackling, "Come on, grow up, grow up, grow up," nothing. Mama had to keep bringing him food, which must have been embarrassing, since Junior was now as big as she was. Finally, she said to hell with him and stopped the catering service, too. But Junior is still there. Mom is long gone. How or what he's eating, I don't know. But that bird is not moving.
If I could dress like a cowgirl every day, if I could give up some of my typified ways, if I could rest my head upon your shoulder, oh, if I were just a little bit bolder, I would be happy then.
For Pedro Show, we start off the second hour with Snake Bite 2. That's the number. not also. Karen Hagloff, then out of Glasgow, Stillhouse Plants. Sade. They'll be doing something with them in February. I was invited. Scottish guys, but they're doing something in London. With the Cafe Oto, which means sound, huh? Quinny with Tammy Total, which is an older singer they work with. The Extract out of Canada with Dead Letters. I got to record a vocal for that. Yeah. Chris Butler out of Akron, Ohio with Pigeons. And finally, Karen Hagloff with Cowgirl Clothes. See, that's from there, right? So, Band of Susans, what, to the late 80s?
I guess I joined them in probably I'm going to say 88, something like that. And then I stopped playing music in the early 90s.
Okay. That's what I wanted to get to.
Completely.
Yeah, people, you got to understand, Karen, she scissored music to study medicine.
That I did.
Okay. What was that like?
Well, it was definitely, there were some things that were the same and some of them were different. I mean, I'd always played in bands and worked in restaurants, and all of those are like, you know, they're 24/7 kind of deals, and you're working holidays, and you're working where other people aren't, and medicine is a lot like that, so on the kind of nuts and bolts side, you can kind of see some similarities. But, you know, there's definitely a different level of kind of intellectual kind of, intellectual investment in playing or in working in medicine and trying to get into that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in both endeavors, you practice.
Yeah. Yes, you do.
You know, I've yet to see a basketball player say, hey, I'm going down the hoops and rehearse some shots.
No.
You know, what's wrong with the word practice? Anyway, I think it goes back to probably praxis, not an older word. But, you know, you had been playing since a girl, music, and just a completely... let it go.
Yeah, well, I was like mid-30s. I guess I was like 33 or 34, and I was working in the restaurants, and I was like thinking, boy, you know, I like doing this now, but in 10, 15 years, am I going to like doing this so well? And I kind of didn't think so, and I thought, well, maybe it's time for me to think about what might be next down the road, and that led back to actually finishing a college degree, and that's where... well, the kind of medical interest came from. And I, you know, couldn't think of any reason why I shouldn't try to do it. And I was successful getting in, and here I am. So
yeah, oncology.
Yeah,
cancer. Yeah, it's killed so many of my friends, my pop, all my grandparents. It's such a fucked up thing.
It is terrible. Yeah, it's really
especially
terrible.
This pancreatic one, man. It kills people so quick.
Pancreatic.
We lost Tony from the Dills. You know. Like a month.
Yeah, I know. Some of them are just really deadly very, very quickly. And then others you can actually do something about, and others you can actually cure. And that's where
Can I ask you a little opinion?
Yeah.
Because I think in the old days, like maybe, because little kids are born with it, right?
Yes.
So obviously it's not an environment thing, unless it's on their parents, but... do you think it switched over from you being born with and then this environment stuff?
Well, I think there's always an interplay of it. I mean, I think there's a lot of genetic probably predispositions that we don't even know about yet. Sure. And then depending on the environmental kind of cues and stresses, you know, some genes get turned on, some genes get turned off, and there may be a predisposition. And some things you acquire genetically through your lifetime and... yeah, there are definitely certain, you know, substances, you know, asbestos or benzene, things like that, that are definitely carcinogenic. So there's a combination of different factors.
Yeah, like most things, it's complicated. I want to play Tornado here.
Okay.
Something live.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I was thinking this part could be, this music could be for when Duber jumped his bike over the creek after he quits his job at the donut shop that puts ice cream on the donuts. That's combo donut ice cream shop called Donuts a la Mode. And he flips his boss the bird and takes off on his bike. And this is, this music's, he ends up jumping the creek and feeling super free for a while. So he ends up working at his uncle's machine shop that summer, using, learning how to use the CNC lathe. That's a lot better than making donuts and then with ice cream, because it's not a combination that that many people actually like. So I haven't really gotten past this part. I know that he's working at his uncle's machine shop and living in a trailer behind their house. And maybe he'll learn to play the electric guitar.
Thank you. We'll be right back. with a superpowered skater whirling around the track, jamming blockers like the wind and never coming back. Couldn't be doing better with a first-rate provider, with the gear and a person beside her who understands her. This is the 608 Passion. We will blaze on to success with the skates you want and the padding of the best. Wise help and choices with all of the rest. When you want the best, come to the one who has known it, one who has the power to be first-rate, one who has the time to feel and relate. 608 Skate will make you feel all right, down and dirty, ready to skate mean. Try out our gear and skates for the fast track scene.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Yeah, we started off with Tornado, something live from the Karen Hagloff Band. And was that the name of the band?
That is the name we came up with.
Okay, okay. And then Ginferno out of Spain with Creepy Cloud, Dan Jones, Kansas City, Missouri. Duber Feeling Free for a while. Missing with Darkest Bravest. The Healers out of Illinois. Yeah, I can't remember where Missing's from. I'm missing that information. Chemistry and Circumstance. Tubax out of Italy with Chicagoan. Italianos know how to call somebody from Chicago a Chicagoan, huh? Part two, and that's trippy. It ends with a bunch of farm sounds. But, Joe Brewer out of Madison, Wisconsin, 608 Skate, and Hit Priest from here in SoCal, Strong Beach, bad customer. Finally, Karen Hagloff Band again, probably from the same gig, with Trouble. So, while you're going to school, no yep. music, because you want to focus, right?
Yeah.
Not even downtime. Well, you know, medicine, that is incredible amount of focus you need to do that. So, much respect. So, I don't blame you for putting it down.
Pretty intensive at the time, yeah.
What was that?
It's pretty intensive at the time, especially med school and, you know, trying to learn everything, master it, and not fail anything, and get through, and get a residency, and all that kind
of
stuff.
Right, and live in that area.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays it's Jesus Christ, but I can maybe more a little more econo then, but I can. Yeah, I'm going to learn medicine in Manhattan. You know, okay, but much respect for you to do that. Truly.
Thank you.
Then, what changed? Well, you got your degree. You got your practice.
I got my degree. I went to Florida. I was in Gainesville, Florida for about 3 years doing my residency, so learning how to actually be a doctor.
And Gators.
The Gainesville. Gainesville. Go Gators. And then got my fellowship in hematology and oncology back up in New York at NYU.
Right.
And that's all study, but at least, you know, you're actually practicing medicine. And then I've been, you know, kind of an attending doctor, meaning somebody who is deemed competent to work on their own since about, I don't know, 2004, 2005, something like that.
So when do you decide that I want to get back into music?
Into music?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't played since, like, probably, I'm going to say 1998. And then that movie, you probably saw it, It Might Get Loud, came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw that the first weekend it came out here in the East Village in the Sunshine Theater. And there was all these clips of Jimmy Page and Jack White and The Edge. And I was like, crap, I play the guitar. Why aren't I playing the guitar? This looks awesome. And
wow.
That's where it kind of started back again.
It was those three guys, so we got to give credit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, Jimmy Page, I remembered from back then, and because I'd been away from things so long, I mean, of course I knew about The Edge, but Jack White was like, somebody was like, what? Who the heck is this?
First time I met him, he was playing drums in kind of a ha-ha band called Goober and the Peas. He was still a teenager. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's trippy. Yeah, he told me, I remember talking with him. He said he did a postery at his pop's postery shop. So, you still had your stuff. You still had your guitars and your amps.
I was one of those people that didn't get rid of their gear. So, I had my Les Paul, I had a Jazzmaster and a Jaguar, and I just pulled them out and started to try and... I got out Mel Bay Book 1, basically, back then. To like, okay, let's start at the beginning and see what we can come up with.
I'm curious, what were your fingers like? Were they like all...
It's amazing, you know, I was really pretty rough, for sure, and then, but it's amazing stuff that comes back. I mean, I can remember, you know, kind of chord progressions that I made up when I was 15, and they came all back after a while, so it's kind of amazing what your fingers, what your muscle memory will do.
Yeah, I saw it happen with James Williamson. He hadn't played in like 30 years, And then all that raw power, you know, for the reunited band. Yeah, and you know, I think if you got your own thing, that it's still there. If you coax it back, I mean, it takes some work and stuff.
It definitely takes some work. And then I started, you know, finding, I wanted to do finger picking stuff. I'd been going out west to like ride horses, and I'd hang around the campfire and see all these kind of cowboy singers. And I was like, well, maybe I could do that. I mean, I don't think I'd be in a band again, but I thought, well, maybe I can just amuse myself and other people playing kind of like parlor guitar, you know, just finger picking and, you know, playing some songs. And that's kind of where I started to write again, and then contacted Steve Almas and said, hey, I have these things. Maybe you'd help me figure out where to take them. And that's, you know, and here we are.
That's really happening. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, August 29, 2018 edition of the Wild from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. August 29, 2018, it's the third hour of the Wild from Pedro Show.
Thank you. Dirty with the abscesses left another voicemail message. Dirty with the abscesses. Her daddy's the boss. Dirty with the abscesses left another voicemail message. Dirty with the abscesses. Her daddy's the boss.
For Pedro Show, we started the third hour off with Monday Under My Belt, Karen Hagloff, then some stuff from Pedro here, this label, Water Under the Bridge, Lady Hump with Kool-Aid, some Live Plebes, yeah, from middle 80s, huh? No Way to Find It, Rats in the Louvre, they're more new, Rah Rah Replica, then we had from upstate New York, Bird Perverts and Jody, and then Endless Court Contortionists. Yeah, they were out of here. I think they're living back east now. Ushida Movement 1. Ushida's a off-ramp people. And then Italiano, and then Karen Hagloff finally with Seesaw. So, yeah, with you and your old buddy, you start making some records. Let's talk about this EP, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all four tunes are about horses, right?
They are. They are about horses.
Yeah, so tell me about the Germinate. Because you did already a comeback record, the Grace and Perseverance. Actually, there's a record before that, too, right?
Yeah, Western Holiday was the first one. Perseverance and Grace, and now I've got this EP that I just put out, and then there's something coming up after this one, too.
And you would say all four of these records are kind of connected, right?
Well, I mean, it's all, I guess it's because it's all mainly stuff I've written, and it's about my experiences and, you know, and life and love and death and cancer and horses and, you know, things I think about. So, I guess it's all me.
And what about horses?
I love horses. I've loved them since I was, you know.
Because you grew up with them, right? You rode them into town, right?
And rode them down to the music store.
To the music store.
That kind of stuff.
You ever play guitar while riding on a horse?
I have not done that yet. I'm afraid it would spook a horse and I'd be off that horse in a minute.
But what's his name? Gene Autry, right?
Yeah.
Singing cowboy, right?
Yeah. Roy Rogers rode a horse with
the car. Roy Rogers did too. But Gene Autry was really the idea of the singing cowboy.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's got a lot to do with, I think, how country music is kind of perceived, because it's much different before him. You know, what's his name? A friend of Richard Mel. Nick Toshes. He wrote a book about Twisted Roots. Country, but and it's interesting about this. But anyway, so you deemed horses important enough to do a record about,
You know, it just turns out that they were. I wrote one ode to Bon Jovi because this horse Bon Jovi threw me off a couple of times, and that seemed like he needed a song written about him for that.
Wow, is it scary getting thrown from a horse? Christ. I know Liz Taylor, she got really hurt by that when she was younger. It hurt her whole life.
Yeah. Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, I've been lucky. I've been booted off or fallen off a few times and never been hurt too badly, so it hasn't deterred me from riding or wanting to ride, so I guess I'm lucky that way.
You think from the horse's persona or maybe the situation?
Probably situation, and I mean, like, the one time I went off of Bon Jovi, I was not paying attention. The other time, we were just kind of going around a reckless curve, so, you know, two different reasons for, you know, the same outcome of me being off a horse, but one probably more my fault than his. They're both my fault. If I go off, it's my fault.
Okay. Riding a horse, though, ain't like jumping in a car. There has to be a connect, right?
No, there does. And the horse, you know, they know. If you're afraid or if you, you know, have any kind of trepidation, they will know it. And some of them will take advantage of it, and some of them will take care of you on it. So, you definitely, it's not like getting on a motorbike. They have their own little brain and their own little way of thinking that things are scary that you realize are not scary at all. And you just have to be aware of it if you're...
What about between a stallion and mare?
What?
Is there a difference in the sexes, stallion, mare, riding a woman or riding a man?
Well, I mean, most of the horses that, you know, you ride at like a ranch or something like that are not intact stallions. They're gelded. So
they are not
able to, you know, bear any fruit or anything like that. And they tend to be probably a little bit more manageable. One of the ranches I ride at will not have mares because they're too unpredictable, and sometimes they're a little bossy and bitchy, and I think they probably are. I'll probably get some crap on that, but I think it's probably true.
So you say the best ride is a neutered male.
That's probably the most, I would say that's probably the most predictable ride.
Okay, I want to play Steel Blue Hills here.
Okay.
I know the steel Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Karen Hagloff with Steel Blue Hills. What are the Steel Blue Hills?
They are the Bradshaw Mountains in Arizona.
Okay. Got it.
They're I ride in Wickenburg, which has a lot of dude ranches, and
sure.
You can see them off in the distance.
Sure, beautiful country.
Yeah.
Then from Beijing, we had the Top Four Circus with Ride to Death. Oswald Dovey out of Czech Republic Evening, Mold Omen out of Baltimore, Maxica, number one, Patrick Grant with Shapes, number two, Echo Test out of Philly with Pleasant Fortune, Pleasant Torture, not Fortune, what, my eyes, and then finally, Ode to Bon Jovi, Karen Hagloff. People, this is the horse, not the band, dude.
Definitely.
Speaking of which, China, it was a town called Wuxi. You know, first time I got to play there was about a year and a half ago, and there was some, the pad we were playing, Nolo-wise, it was all Chinese, and we had to go on after a live movie of a Bon Jovi gig, played all the way through twice. I mean, the screen was like 80 feet tall, 70 feet tall. Yeah, that was some. Yeah, here I remember one of you shit the sheets. There is no shame. You give incontinence a bad name or something. You piss the sheets or something. What's that? Obviously, the EP just came out a couple days ago, right?
Not quite out yet. It'll be out, like, within the week.
Oh, because so. Howard told me 24th. Okay.
Oh, no. 7th.
Okay. The 7th?
Yeah.
Of September. Okay. And where can people find you on the internet?
Pardon me?
Your presence on the internet, Karen. How do they find you?
They would find me, I have a website, KarenHagloff.com, and I'm all over Instagram.
That's KarenHagloff.com.
Right, just one F.
Yeah, just one F, people.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's always Facebook, and then, of course, my favorite, Instagram. And all under my name like that.
And no shitter?
Hmm?
Just Instant Ham and Fake Look, no shitter?
No.
Okay, but that's enough. And also, you got your own webpage, so that's like her fanzine, people. So you can get this. Now, there's a little period in between this four-song EP and then a real album.
Yes.
Okay. In the meantime, are you going to tour this?
You know, I'd love to, but it's kind of hard with my job.
Yeah,
so,
I understand.
I've played a couple of gigs. I played on Sunday night doing like a songwriter thing at a local bar here. Doing some of these songs in kind of a more acoustic setting. I would love to try and put something together, but, you know, that takes there's a lot of moving parts that need to get kind of organized. Yeah,
absolutely, I understand. So the renditions you're doing of these tunes is like Woman Alone, just you and acoustic?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because obviously the stuff on the records, there's bands and,
yeah.
You were saying something, you like a deep bass.
Hmm?
You like deep bass.
I do like deep,
heavy
bass.
Which I sacrifice. Although, if somebody asked you for...
Like, is there enough bass there? And I was like, there's enough bass there, Karen.
Okay. If somebody a little bit younger, or just getting into this, asked you for advice, because your journey is very unique, like everybody's is, actually.
Yeah.
What would you tell them, Karen?
Well, I guess I would tell them to just to kind of follow what your gut tells you to do. I mean, it's got to do what makes you happy, basically.
I think that's great advice.
There's no magic.
Right. And if you quit, you can always come back?
Well, there's that, too. I mean, there's no set order you have to do things in. I mean, obviously, if you want to be a pop star, you're probably better off doing it when you're 20 or 19. But you can still play music you want to play when you're, you know, elderly like myself. You know?
No, just less younger.
Yeah, less young. That's better.
Yeah, that reminds me of this lyric by the pop group you say in pop. There's a song called We Are Time, and Mark Stewart says, no sequence to follow, no fear of tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Truly, Karen, it's a great honor to have you aboard.
Well, it was a great honor to be here. I really appreciate you letting me come on.
And when the new album comes out, please have Howard flow, because I would love to play it.
I will definitely do that. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. And keep on keeping on, okay?
Definitely. You too.
Okay, I promise I will. Okay. People, it's August 29, 2018 edition of Walk for Pedro Show. Special guest Karen Hagloff. Keep your powder dry.